Today's program has been brought to you by the International Culinary Center, offering courses that range from classic French techniques in culinary, pastry, and bread baking to Italian studies to management, from culinary technology to food writing, from cake making to wine tasting. For more information, visit internationalculinarycenter.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and every Wednesday at 11 o'clock, we have a conversation about my favorite subject, taste. And today, we've taken the show on the road a little bit. We are at the site of this weekend's Cochon 555 event, the kickoff of the 2014 series, and I'm sitting here with Brady Lowe, who is the, mastermind, curator, producer, pig lover, Pinot lover, lover of bourbon, all things bourbon, drinking, mezcal. Yeah, messy guy. And we are going to talk about this project and a lot of other things, I think, that are really true both to this radio station, Heritage Radio Network, but also, I think, to one of the successes that Brady has had is he's tapped into this movement among chefs and eaters who are just wanting to connect more to their food, to the pleasure of eating, and sharing a sort of worldview as much as sharing dinner. So welcome to the show, Brady.
Hey, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So 2014, what year is this? Is this the sixth year?
Number six.
Sixth year of the tour. How many cities will you be doing this year?
We're on to 17 events now.
Wow.
So starting with 10, and the first, the signature series has been Cochon 555, and then we took all the winners to Grand Cochon, and that was the first 11, and then we've been having kids ever since.
We won't go there, but one in every town, right? So let's start at the very beginning. Cochon means?
Pig in French.
Pig in French, and 555.
Five chefs, five pigs, five winemakers.
Okay, and what was the impetus behind putting those three, five things together with a French pig?
The original name was Amuse Cochon.
Okay.
And Amuse Cochon was based after Amuse Bouche. Mm. And it was meaning to entertain the mouth. And there was an education because people, when you start a meal, it's kind of a journey. So I started that as the brand. And then I started to get voicemails after the first two events of, yes, this is Sally calling about Amuse Cochon. So I changed the name, and I looked at the components of the event, and I'm a big numbers guy. So Cochon 555 was a very strong way to describe what we were doing. And the logo was always the same. We always had five chefs, five pigs, five winemakers, right. But I just dropped Amuse and added the fives.
Okay, and so let's start the conversation, I guess, with the pig, which is the centerpiece, let's say, of the event. Why are you working so hard to pull these chefs together and to give them a pig? And explain a little bit about what the process is.
The process starts with a handshake. And it always kind of evolves around creating some kind of peace or culture that people feel enriched after, meeting you or talking to you or listening to a radio show. They want to walk away with a nugget of information that they can share with somebody else. And Cochon is based after a lot of research that I did that, sometimes farmers don't have the opportunity to meet chefs. And this was an opportunity to put a pig in the hand of a chef and give them 7 to 10 days, 100% creative license to do whatever they want, and then to show up and serve it to a whole audience. And you don't really have to put the farmer up on the pedestal, but it's always known. And everybody can feel that where that food comes from. And you get everyone up on stage, and you look across the room, and there's 500 people staring at you who want to see a winner. And you say, you know what? It's not about the winner today. It's about the person who made the pig that we're all standing here. And with that, it's kind of like why I do it, because it feels good. I get goosebumps just thinking about the people that you're touching. But it's not so orchestratedly illustrated. You know, mm-hmm. it's not so detailed. Like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's not manipulated. It's natural. Yeah, it's very organic. And you know, we have a good party, and we have great people who are around the movement. And you know, and then you just get bit by the pig, and then you chase it around to 17 cities.
Okay, so five chefs each gets a pig, a different breed of pig, correct?
Yeah. From,
I mean, by design or just so to mix it up.
It's all education.
Right.
So we start with, I could go to one source and find five Berkshire pigs,
sure.
but that's not going to do anything for the chefs. And it's not going to make it as fun for them. So we split it up, and I look for the perfect event is seven different breeds, two of them which are really brand new to the market, and five that are good farmers who have been doing it. And they kind of like, we swap them around. So it's kind of like Mitchell's working with red wattles all year long. And I'm like, Mitchell, for this event, I'm going to take your red wattle farmer. I'm going to give it to Lauren.
No, bring him back.
And then Lauren's like, I want to work with Mitchell's red wattle. And then Lauren gets a different pig for, you know, like, and we change up and do, it's all about diversity. Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, you're looking at a population and a, you know, a movement of like farmers raising these heritage breed animals. But one, if we don't eat them, they don't disappear. And two, you have to have the ability for diversity, because in a farming environments, you know, animals, they can die. They can get diseases. People can go out of business. Farmers can die. I mean, like, things can shut down pretty quickly. And you need to have the ability, if you're going to support local agriculture, to have options. So that's the diversity component.
So let's,
and different breeds is part of that.
Right. So let's talk about that a little bit, because in some of the conversations I've been having around the country and in my TED talk or TEDx talk, I should say, on taste, I posited this idea that taste could be a tool to counteract some of the things happening in our food system that we don't all necessarily agree with. And one of them, I think that's pretty profound, is the commodification of foods. So pork happens to be one of those foods that has been, quote unquote, commodified, in that it's all produced somewhat anonymously. The goal is to make it all exactly the same. If they could make it all completely, utterly the same, they would, so that it's a free market and it trades whatever across borders, across whatever, as easily as possible. And yet here you are celebrating the differences in breeds, the differences in producers. One imagines that correlates to differences in taste and the way that they operate in the kitchen. And in some ways, I would suggest to you that educating people about the differences is really how you go about counteracting that commodification process, that mass unidentified food system we've got. Is that part of the underlying project here? It's not just fun?
100%. I mean, you're exactly hitting it. It's an awesome point. You know, the way that I thought about it is you got to draw a line in the sand. And that line in the sand right now is the difference between production and artisan. And commodification is production. Mm-hmm. And I personally want to be known, and I want to consume things that I believe in and that I, you know, that I like. If you like believe in like this product and it's 100% artisan, you can tell the story, you can go all the way back to the source, and you feel good about it from the moment you learn about it to the moment you put it on your plate. Or drive it around, or whatever, you know, put it on your watch. There are certain things. Now, production, you're not into that anymore. You forgot about the process, and that's where we've been in the dark for 40 or 50 years. It's like they're just pushing us farther from right. the artisan.
Mm-hmm.
And it is about mass consumption, and that's what the industry we live in, which is fine, and I, you know, I love it, and we do what we do, but, you know, when it comes to food, it's all about artisan. Now, that line in the sand that I'm talking about, I think it's just about making people aware, you know, because the moment that you're aware that there is two systems and that you decide which one you're going to actively be in some days and the ones that you're going to serve your family every night,
mm-hmm.
then you start to decide that, all right, now am I going to be an educator of awareness or am I going to just be a supporter of what I believe?
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the tour, it is. It's the tenet is like it's education and it's about making people aware, but not doing it in a way where you're pointing a finger or find it for yourself. It's here. It's on the floor. It's in a party. Like there's tons of people here that are all doing the same thing, you know?
Right. So you've alluded to one of the challenges to this kind of approach, I guess, which is access and the accessibility that people have to these, I mean, I'll call them fancy items. Heritage breed pigs are expensive, even to the point that one of the challenges you present to the chefs is to use every piece of it, everything and the oink.
Yep.
And that's part of the fun of the competition among the chefs, but also I think speaks to the need to re-educate people about the value of what it is, not just the pleasure of it, that there is value beyond price per pound of XYZ cuts. Can you speak a little bit about access? And I mean, what does the family who just has to feed themselves every week have to participate in this conversation?
I think you have to go back to, you know, the frugal idea of what our parents did or what they did in the 70s and 80s was they bought meat and put it in the freezer. Mm. I mean, we're in a fresh meat society. There's nothing wrong with putting some really good meat in the freezer. Hunters, gatherers, preservers, dryers, you know, beef jerky, whatever it is. Like, people preserve mm-hmm. what they care about. And, you know, and I think it is. I think if you want to have access, the flavor is the rewarding part. The relationship with the source is a rewarding part. You know, there's a new thing coming. I don't know what it is yet, but I think there's like a social heartfelt umami that is, there's something, you know, like somebody's going to have this new seventh sense of like food, which means that you just feel so goddamn good mm. that you got it, you know?
I love the idea of social umami. I think we have to use that. It could be a band. okay, so we have, let's go back to the event itself. Five chefs, they each get a pig. They each are sort of competing for judges. I'll be one of the judges in New York, but there are judges in every city. To do what? Like, what? How does someone win? What is the goal here besides the education piece and the accessibility or the playing around with a different pig and having fun?
So the perfect winner of the event, who there's 10 events and each person, there's one winner out of five chefs. So the best example of a Cochon chef who takes on the win, they're in their restaurant. They would have heritage breed pig on the menu. You look at their menu, you can see a whole animal in usage. You see ragu, blood sausage, you can pork testa, like you see these items. They take what they know as a overall whole animal utilization, and that is one of the categories, whole animal utilization. Second one is presentation. The third one is flavor. So you look at these three categories, you score. So if the chef comes in and understands that today I have one whole pig, I have 7 days to prepare it, and I want to serve it to 20 judges, then you have this opportunity to do six dishes. And all the judges score based on those three categories, and then whoever wins takes it on and wins the challenge. Now, I think it starts back at the kitchen, you know, before I even make the invite, mm-hmm. that you're doing this whole animal utilization because you don't want to throw anything away. It's mm-hmm. all about, like, preserving every last, you know, drop of that animal so you can make money at it mm-hmm. and that you can pay the farmer exactly what that animal is worth. And, you know, when you look at the price per dollar on the pound versus what those animals can yield in a restaurant setting, it's absolutely such a fair deal. So I think in the long haul, like what I'm saying is that the winner of the event does it outside of the event, but also gets celebrated mm-hmm. inside. Mm-hmm. And all the chefs here are doing it. Now, sometimes a really big win for me is when we do the event and we have a chef who is scratching at the surface of using whole animal, or they only use half a pig a month, or they're trying, but their system doesn't. And they come to the event and they see all the utilization from all the other chefs. They see what's going on and it just clicks and they start buying whole animals once or twice a month because now they know how to like utilize it through their system and make more money at it. So that is, and so you even have these winners who are like developing outside of just a trophy.
Right.
So it's a hard thing because that's what the event's kind of, you know, all about.
Right. Let's talk about that just a little bit. I know that most people, if they found their way to Heritage Radio Network, which in some ways was founded on a pig, they are familiar with the need to utilize the whole animal, or may have heard that. But for people who are less familiar, What's the big deal? Why is that part of a different food movement to think about using every piece of the animal?
Because, you know, one, it's there's respect. You know, you have respect for the animal in itself and where it came from and who raised it. And it was made with purpose and passion, and it was delivered to you with an intention that you were going to serve it with all of your heart and soul, because they raised it with all their heart and soul. So there's that social umami that comes back. Mm-hmm. Then there's the ability to crack that animal open and have it speak to you and tell you what those specials are going
to
be.
It probably speaks to you before you crack it open, yeah. I think. But yeah, I hear you.
and then you have like the whole ability to, you know, take that animal and see every single opportunity from bones to stock to grinding to how do you take that whole animal and make the most potential for not only your guest experience, but also for your bottom line. And, you know, throwing stuff away that's the worst thing. Mm. You know, like, I mean, if I owned a restaurant, I'd have somebody who stood over the garbage can with clipboards.
Right.
What are you throwing away? And that's what you can't do, because you're just losing that opportunity for your kitchen to get creative. And I think that's one of the big pieces today is, like, you put a pig in front of five chefs. It's team building, it's exercise, it's conversation, it's ideas, it's what can we do with this, and everybody gets to talk. Mm-hmm. And that is, you can't buy that mm-hmm. with a box cutter and 14 pork chops.
Right. We're going to think about that and savor that idea. I'm talking to Brady Lowe, who is the curator, founder of the Cochon 555 experience. You are listening to Taste Matters. We'll be right back after a brief musical interlude. Thanks.
You are listening to Loveless Child by Shadowbox on heritageradionetwork.org.
The International Culinary Center is a proud sponsor of the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. The ICC, with locations in New York and California, provide cutting-edge education to future chefs, restaurateurs, and wine professionals. We're proud to claim Dan Barber, Bobby Flay, and David Chang among our honored alumni. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton from Chef Story. Check out our ICC website at internationalculinarycenter.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I'm talking with Cochon 555 founder and curator Brady Lowe. Before we get back into it, and there's a couple of topics, I'm going to throw you a few hardballs, although I'll throw them softly, Brady. I want to remind people that if you are listening to the podcast or to the archive, that you can write us questions. We obviously can't answer them on air, as this is pre-recorded, but we'll certainly be able to answer them in email or on Twitter. Write us at info@heritageradionetwork.org or tweet us at TasteMattersHRN. If we don't do it on the air, we'll get you an answer some way, and we know where to find Brady if you have a question about Cochon 555. So what I want to ask, this is something I've been thinking about and never even articulated, but here we are in the food world in the midst of a pig moment, let's say. I mean, you're a part of that, heritage, meats, you know, you can't get away from bacon or anything. And so much of the world doesn't eat pork, like is morally opposed to pork. Is there any acknowledgement of that? Or, I mean, even at your event, like, I mean, I don't even know why I'm asked. I'm Jewish. I eat a lot of pork, but I'm just. It's just a funny thing. Like there's a large portion of the world that cannot participate in this. Does that ever enter your thinking?
No. Okay. I mean, my first event ever, we put it on. I think it was on the day of Yom Kippur.
Okay.
And the first five people who bought tickets were my Jewish buddies.
Wow.
And at that point, it was just. I mean, it. Of course, I've had farmers, you know, people like I've seen like the other side of the conversation where things get a little nasty and people talking about it, you know, like the whole PETA and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think, no, it doesn't really like, I think I got a little boost early on, you know, what we're doing. So I just haven't really even thought about it. And I think we've actually transformed some people.
Transformed is one word. Their religious leaders might have another word. Okay, and the second question is a little bit more topical and not so much in my mind, but you know, there was recently this God of Food Time magazine cover story that featured five men and created quite a stir because there weren't women around, and the nature of the movement you're talking about and some of the events that I've just been flipping through the pictures of is largely male chef oriented, and maybe that's a misstatement, so you correct me if I'm wrong, but is there what is this a brother thing, a bra thing, or is there more about this than someone who might criticize it for that sees?
Are you saying competition? Are you talking culinary?
I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm talking whole animals. I don't know what I'm talking about. But there is, I've been to the events before, and I think they're amazing. I'm not criticizing at all. But there's this question here. What is the role of women? Are you conscious when you invite people to include women chefs?
100%. I mean, last year when we were in New York, we kicked off the tour. We had five women participate. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time. And I think, you know, it's always a goal. Like, it's enjoyable and empowering and inspiring to see everybody doing it. And, I mean, gosh, there's two sexes. It's not like every, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Of course. Well, I mean, we could have the same conversation about, you know, ethnic diversity and chess. I'm asking as an industry thing, because they're topics that we wrestle with all the time at the Beard Foundation, and they seem to be brimming near the surface about this amazing food movement that's happening and who is really participating and who is getting the attention. And I'm just curious about your thoughts.
I think, I've seen women on the rise right now, you know, and I think maybe it is people are wanting to, you know, share the landscape and make sure that everyone's getting a look. And because there are, like, there's a ton of great chefs out there, and I don't think sex really matters. I mean, if you've got good food, it tastes good, you're going to move forward. Like, you know, I think a disjustice to anybody is to give them an award for food that's not that good, you know? Right. So, you know, and that's the thing is, like, it's about dedication, it's about personality, it's about your support to the local community or whatever community you believe in. If it is commodity, like, whatever you do, that you do the best at you can. And I think that the people who are in the spotlight right now, there's more of a, I think the percentage of who's in the spotlight right now is more under question than the people that are, you know, it's kind of hard to articulate. Like, I think there's a lot of great chefs out there. I think if you put a lot of, a lot of forward thinking into who's doing it and why they're doing it and how they're doing it, it always ends on the plate. And it always ends up who's doing the work that the people are getting the celebration. You know, and I look more at, like, street cred awards than I do about, like, media attention and accolades. But, you know, it's a good indicator. It's a good flag that if they're getting really good praise in the press, you know. But at times, like, that's when people start to disappear from the kitchens.
Right.
And then they start to lose control. And, you know, it's a hard balance, you know. You want to build your business. You want to build your brand. You want to build your character. And it's intriguing as a chef, as a producer, as a winemaker, to get the attention, to answer it, because that's what you're kind of doing it for. Mm-hmm. And then to try to juggle an extra baton of fire plus a cleaver plus a chainsaw, you know, and then it turns into a whale, you know, like, how many things can you throw at me?
Right.
And the people who can juggle the biggest and baddest items, I mean, there should be like a whale award. Somebody should get the chainsaw award. Like, somebody tossed you a chainsaw and you juggled it. You know what I mean? Like, that's where you kind of see the leaders. And I think the leaders in the kitchen right now are the people who have really good teams behind them. And I think that's an interesting piece to me, is like watching people. And that's what's inspiring to me, is like, how do people delegate? How do they talk? How do they have a great system? You know, I mean.
And how do you see that in, let's say, the course of this event? Or just curious because you also point out that we know the chef's name mostly. If we know a name, we know a chef's name, but we rarely know all the hundreds of other people behind that person. So how does that manifest itself in this experience?
Well, I mean, Koshan, I mean, we've been working with a lot of great chefs, and I'm not an A-list celebrity chef ask guy. I ask hardworking chefs who are in the kitchen every day busting their ass to like put good food on the table. Mm-hmm. And usually they're doing it for chefs who are traveling around juggling, you know, whales and chainsaws. Or doing other things.
Can we clarify, just in case someone's listening, we're not really juggling whales. We're not serving whales. That's not what we're talking about. There's no underground whale. Well, actually, maybe there is. I read a story recently in The New Yorker about something in California, in L.A. that was shut down. There was an underground whale thing. But that's not what we're talking about. I just want to make that clear.
It's clear. I'm on board.
Okay.
The whale ship. So, you know, and I think there is that. I think there's that component. Like, you're just... You know, you're looking for hardworking chefs, and this is their chance to like get some play, you know, out there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of been an honor to be sitting in the seat that I'm sitting in, because I'm just getting passed around from great chef to great chef to good chef to great chef, and saying work with this guy, work with this girl, work with this great girl, like, and everybody's just like mm-hmm. talking, and you know, it's been nice on that level. So I see kind of like we're kind of the event for the people. You know, I mean, event for the working chefs.
For the working chefs, you know, in the kitchens with chainsaws
and whole pigs.
And whole pigs. So we've got our chefs, we've got our pigs. The last five is wine. Let's talk a little bit about the role that plays. And obviously, I think there is kind of a whole grape movement, but that's not what we're talking about. It's not the same. It's not the same thing. But there is an artisanship. So what? How in your mind does wine fit into this whole vision?
Well, wine is where it started. When I became an educator, it was because of wine. I was educating on wine and cheese, and that component has always been one of the backbone conversations for what I believe in, and it's the art of reflection. You have a sun, it hits the ground, and out comes the grape. It's a very simple mirror. Mm-hmm. And the job of the best winemaker is to get the fuck out of the way and let it jump into the bottle. Mm-hmm. And that is the art of reflection. And you look at that component, and you see almost the exact same thing in pigs. Mm. So if the sun hits the ground grows, the pig grows, and then it's the farmer to make it as healthy as possible and to get out of the way, and then to deliver it with the least amount of process possible to the chef, who then puts it on the plate. And it's a very, very organic connection, mm-hmm. you know, and there's a lot of relationship between the farmer and the winemaker. And what I've been trying to do is my company, Taste Network, is all about pairings. So I always want to put the chef with the farmer, and I want to educate the winemaker on the pig farmer, because then they can make a connection, and then they feel associated with something that's a like brand or a like movement or a like cause, mm-hmm. and then they can feel good about it. Yet I think, you know, in the last few years, some winemakers lose sight of what they're doing because it's about case sales or it's about, you know, but you got to think about where your food is being associated and how it's being associated with what's on the plate. And I think that's kind of been the movement. You know, for me, it's mm-hmm. like what gets me moving in the morning is to like make sure people understand that there is a relationship between growing your own, I mean, just winemakers and farmers. They're so close. They're the same thing.
I would imagine with all of that pork and wine, it's hard to get you moving in the morning. But that's another topic for another show. Let's talk about what's coming up in the tour. I mean, by the time people are listening to this, they can't attend New York, but there's plenty on the plate, so to speak. And so tell us a little bit where you're going and what you're most excited about, looking forward to, besides the whole thing. I'm sure there are a few things that stand out.
We've got the 10 cities. So we have Koshan 5x5 and... The website there is koshanby5.com, where you can find out about everything we're going to say right now. It's, you got the 10 events. All the winners go to Grand Koshan in Aspen. So my presenting partner for the tour is Goose Island. So I'm really excited about a contest we're going to do there, where we have like And it's going to be teamed up with Food and Wine magazine. We're going to do this large launch of this like contest that goes out nationwide to be a judge at Grand Cochon. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've never done before. That's really an honor to work with these guys. After that event, we go to Heritage Fire. So that's really my signature series. And then I have Heritage Series. And Heritage kicks off in Napa, right across from the CIA, where there's a lot of education with the students. And we do this outdoor fire cooking event. It's Francis Mallmann, Seven Fires meets Asado Argentine. We're robbed our whole lives of not having this outdoor cooking style where you just have a spit roasted in a bag
of... one of James Beard's first cookbooks was Outdoor Cookery, actually, in mid-40s. Yeah, one of the books that made him famous.
Wow.
Yeah, Cooking Over Fire. It was sort of for men, and it was about fire. Anyway.
That's awesome. And it's just like, I think that's absolutely, a very unique and, a great approach is like Heritage Fire. But we have Heritage Fire, and then from there we go to, and that's all outdoor, everything. Mm-hmm. And then we have about 30 chefs, and then we go from there to the Heritage Barbecue Series. So Heritage Barbecue is something that I believed in a long time. It's all about, it's basically five chefs, five pigs, five bourbons with some wine. And it all takes place during National Bourbon Month. So I've been planning this for about 4 years, and I want to expand the barbecue landscape past competition, past Kansas City and past the South. Like,
right.
I want to take it to like the globe. Like, this is barbecue. This is about community outdoor cooking, and anything that you want to put on your grill and you want to call it barbecue, you can. And you shouldn't have anyone telling you that there's a difference between what you're doing and they're doing. Anyone's better.
You like, realize there's posses loading up into their cars now to come arrest you from various states and regions of barbecue. But
yes.
Okay.
Well, yeah. And that's what I chose. I mean, I chose a big challenge to do that with the event. I mean, that's where I'm at. So we have five barbecue events, which I hope to make it similar to Cochon 5x5 and have 10 in a grand championship. After that, we have potentially an all-star Cochon, which is all the fan favorites and best bites. We do an epic Cochon, which is a one time a year. And that is probably the most exciting thing that I'm looking forward to is like, that's the next. Mm-hmm. Do you want me to tell you about the next thing?
Well, I think we're running out of time actually, but people can go to the website, cochon555.com, and see what's in store. You can also sign up to join your membership. If you really believe in the mission of uniting producers, chefs, winemakers, artisans of food, the chef's course.
Yep.
Full disclosure, the Beard Foundation is a beneficiary of that, but it's something that we support because it's a philosophy we believe in. Any last minute pig advice, between now and our show next week, what should people be thinking about? How could they help?
Go to the farmer's market and talk to farmers and buy bigger pieces of meat.
Okay. Even you vegetarians, just keep them in your house. You don't have to eat them.
Skin on.
Thanks, Brady. A real pleasure to talk to you, as always.
It's an honor.
Looking forward to the New York competition, but also to hearing about the results of the rest of the exciting events you're doing. Next week, Karen Karp will be sitting in my seat. We haven't heard from her for a while, but she's a sometimes guest host. And she'll be talking about a very different aspect, but related to the food system. As you know, she's an expert in the way that our food system functions and the policies and the policies and the people and the way that things come together to make it a better food system for everybody, access for all. You are listening to Taste Matters. I'm Mitchell Davis. Remember, go buy a big piece of meat with the skin on. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.